Welcome to the Voice of America in Mandarin.
这里是美国之音的中文广播。现在就开始今天下午六个小时的中文节目。
各位听众好，今天是六月十九号，北京时间下午五点，我是张燕。现在请听国际新闻。美国高层军事官员说，伊拉克政府要求美国空袭逊尼派激进分子。这些激进分子占领了伊拉克北部一些关键城市，并且威胁要攻进巴格达。美军参谋长联席会议主席陆军上将马丁·邓普西星期三对国会参议院一个小组委员会说，伊拉克政府辜负了本国人民，这令他非常失望。美国国防部长哈格尔说，伊拉克什叶派领导人从未履行有关跟逊尼派以及库尔德人共同组建团结政府的承诺。奥巴马总统还没有决定对伊拉克危机的最佳反应方式。星期三，奥巴马在白宫向国会两院领导人通报了情况。中国一家法院分别判处三名活动人士六年半和三年徒刑。这三名活动人士参与了一个敦促政府官员公示资产的运动。一年来，北京当局对新公民运动进行镇压。江西省这家法院对该组织成员所做的判决是迄今为止最重的。刘平和魏忠平被判处六年半的监禁，罪名是寻衅滋事、扰乱公共场所的秩序和利用邪教破坏法律实施。李思华被判处三年监禁，罪名是扰乱公共场所秩序。在香港的国际特赦组织研究员倪伟平对美国之音说，对这三名活动人士的判决非常荒谬。中国当局逮捕了十多名新公民运动成员。新公民运动是一个组织松散的团体，关注腐败和人权问题。美国副总统拜登说，如果俄罗斯不利用其影响力来帮助制止东乌克兰的分离分子的暴力活动，美国及其盟国将会让俄罗斯付出更大的代价。白宫说，拜登星期三跟乌克兰总统波罗申科进行了电话交谈，双方保证在欧盟领导人下周举行会议之前保持联系。几个月来，亲俄罗斯的分离分子在东乌克兰进行叛乱活动。联合国星期三说，叛乱活动包括杀戮、拷打和绑架，在当地制造恐怖气氛。联合国人权事务官员马加赞尼说，东乌克兰的局势使那些陷于冲突中的人们面临险境。巴勒斯坦民族权利机构主席阿巴斯说，巴基斯坦军队正在协助寻找三名失踪的以色列女孩，据称他们被哈马斯激进分子绑架。阿巴斯星期三在沙特阿拉伯参加穆斯林领导人会议之前表示，这三名女孩属于人类，而巴勒斯坦当局要保护人的生命。阿巴斯说，绑架这三名女孩的人是要毁灭巴勒斯坦人。阿巴斯表示，用来对抗以色列的是在国际讲坛上提出的论据，而不是武器。西班牙王储菲利普星期四将继承他父亲卡洛斯的王位，成为新国王。西班牙就此进入一个新的时期。星期四的王位交接仪式将会是简单而低调的。西班牙官员说，王室了解目前西班牙正陷于经济衰退，失业率高达 25%。在这种情况下举行盛大仪式不合时宜。一名印度出生的研究员赢得了2014年世界粮食奖，他的工作推动了小麦产量的大幅增加。美国国务院星期三在华盛顿宣布，拉加拉姆赢得了这一年度的奖项， 新闻报告完了，是张燕向各位报告的。
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Moore. Welcome to Functioning in Business.
各位听众好，我是杨晨，欢迎收听商务通英语。
Functioning in Business is an intermediate level business English course with a focus on American business practices and culture.
商务通英语是中等程度的商务英语课程，课程题材以美国的商业实践和文化为主，通过电台播音室里的采访和绘画讲授美国英语。今天我们复习本星期的课程，第一课的题目是住店登记第四部分，着重讲怎样澄清问题。今天接受采访的人是史杰饭店的接待员 Marsha Waters 女士。
Last week, we talked with Charles Blake about a business trip he took to the United States last year. As you recall, Mr. Blake works for International Robotics, a Chinese company. Mr. Blake went to San Francisco to meet with Michael Epstein of Advanced Technologies. While Mr. Blake was in San Francisco, he stayed at the Embassy Suites Hotel. Last week, we heard a recording of Mr. Blake's conversation with the receptionists at the Embassy Suites Hotel. Today, we will talk with the Embassy Suites receptionist, Ms. Marsha Waters.Welcome to Functioning in Business, Ms. Waters.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Please call me Marsha.
Okay, Marsha. Tell me, Marsha, have you worked at the Embassy Suites for a long time?
I've been there about 5 years.
And you work at the reception desk, isn't that right?
Yes. I register the new guests, and I help guests who have questions or problems.
Oh, what kinds of problems?
Well, for example, sometimes people need help operating the TV. If they're having trouble...I send someone to their room to help them. Or sometimes people want to change rooms. We had one person who was in a non-smoking room and wanted to change to a smoking room. We couldn't give him a smoking room because there were none available. Then we found out that the person was smoking in the hallway, and that's not allowed.
So what happened?
We had to explain that he could only smoke in designated areas. Then, the next day, we were able to move him to a different room.
Marsha, can you tell our listeners what kinds of services you offer at the Embassy Suites?
Well, one important service we offer is a business center. Our business guests can go to the business center to type letters or send faxes. We also have an internet connection so that they can read their email.
How convenient! What other services do you offer?
We have a great fitness center with a sauna and a jacuzzi.
That sounds like fun.
We also have room service, of course.Many of our business guests like to eat in their rooms so that they can have more time to prepare for meetings.
They work while they eat dinner?
Yes, some people do. I guess they find it easier than going out to a restaurant.
Thank you very much for joining us, Ms. Waters.
It's my pleasure.
We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back, everyone. We're here once again with Gary Engleton, our expert on business and culture.
Hello, everyone. How are you today, Elizabeth?
Very well, thank you, Gary. I'm glad that you're here because we have a very important email question on hotel charges.
Really? What is it?
One of our listeners writes, Sometimes my hotel bill is larger than I expected. In the United States, what extra charges are there in hotels?
That's an excellent question.When you are staying in a hotel, it's a good idea to ask a lot of questions about what is free and what has an extra charge. Extra charges are sometimes called surcharges. They are becoming more and more frequent.
How do you find out about these extra charges?
The first thing that you should do is to look around the room for something written down. For example, there is sometimes information near the telephone about charges for local and long-distance calls.If you can't find anything in writing, you should definitely ask at the front desk.
That's a good idea. What other kinds of extra charges are there?
Well, for example, many hotels have drinks and snacks in small refrigerators. These are not free. Make sure you know how much everything costs before you drink or eat anything. And you can have food brought to your room. That's called room service. It is usually fairly expensive.Look for a menu in the room that lists the prices.
Are there any other surcharges to be careful of?
Well, some hotels offer movies in your room for an extra charge. And remember, tax will usually be added to the room charge. In some U.S. cities, this tax can be 15% or even more. Well, I think that I've covered most of the extra charges. Other facilities like swimming pools, exercise equipment, and even daily newspapers are usually free.
Thanks, Gary. That was extremely helpful.
Good evening. May I help you?
Yes, my name is Allison Peters. I have a reservation.
Let me take a look. Yes, I see you have a room reserved through April 4th.
Actually, I'll be leaving on the morning of the 5th.
Oh, really? I thought you told us you would be checking out on the 4th.
No, I believe I said I would be checking out on the 5th. Let me check my confirmation notice. Here it is. Oh, my goodness, you're right. Can I extend my stay through the 5th?
That's not a problem. I'll change your reservation for you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Gary 提示。
Welcome back. It's time for Gary's tips. What's your topic for today, Gary?
Today, I'll be talking about clarifications. Last week, we talked about the importance of confirming information, especially information about plane and hotel reservations. It's important to confirm because sometimes a hotel clerk or a travel agent might have incorrect information. If you disagree with what the clerk or agent says, there are some polite ways to correct the person. This is called making a clarification. One way to begin a clarification is to use the word actually. Let's listen again to part of the business dialogue. You'll hear Ms. Peters clarifying that she is staying through April 5th.
Good evening. May I help you?
Yes, my name is Allison Peters. I have a reservation.
Let me take a look. Yes, I see you have a room reserved through April 4th.
Actually, I'll be leaving on the morning of the 5th.
Another polite way to make a clarification is to say, I believe. Let's listen again to the business dialogue. Ms. Peters clarifies that she will be checking out on the 6th.
Yes, I see you have a room reserved through April 4th.
Actually, I'll be leaving on the morning of the 5th.
Oh, really? I thought you told us you would be checking out on the 4th.
No, I believe I said I would be checking out on the 5th.
It turns out Ms. Peters is wrong about the dates of her reservation. But by being polite, Ms. Peters maintains a good relationship with the desk clerk and is able to change her reservation. So remember, it's important to correct people if they have the wrong information about your reservations. But it's best to be polite when you make a clarification. Well, that's all we have time for today on Gary's Tips.
本星期第二课的题目是住店登记第五部分，重点讲解怎样客气地向别人提出要求。首先请听电话采访。
Last week, we heard part of a conversation between Charles Blake and the hotel receptionist at the Embassy Suites Hotel. Today, we'll be hearing the rest of the conversation during Mr. Blake's check-in. I have Mr. Blake on the phone. Hello, Charles.
Hello, Elizabeth.
How are you doing?
Just fine.
Last week, we listened in while you checked in at the Embassy Suites.
That's right.
Tell us again why you were in the San Francisco area.
I was on business. I had plans to meet with Michael Epstein of Advanced Technologies. I wanted to talk to him about selling industrial robots to his company.
Now, let's hear the second half of your conversation with the hotel receptionist as you check in.
Okay.
That room is $120 a night.
Okay, fine. Can I use my credit card for that?
Yes, certainly, sir. Can I make a print of your card before we check you in?
Sure. There you are.
Okay, thank you. All right, fine. We're all set here, Mr. Blake, and I'll get the bellman right away. We'll get you to your room.
Oh, by the way, there's a chance I'll be staying one more day, so I might be leaving on Saturday. Is that okay?
Let me check. Well, sir, I'm afraid we're all booked up for Friday night, but something may open up. Can I let you know?
Okay. If you could let me know as soon as possible, I would appreciate it.
Yes, we can do that for you, sir. Okay, and here's your key, sir. I'll get the bellman. Bellman, front!
Let's talk a little about the conversation we just heard.
All right.
I see you asked if you could stay an extra night at the hotel.
That's right. Originally, I planned to stay 4 nights and to leave on Friday. When I arrived in San Francisco, I decided to stay an extra day so that I would have more time to meet with Mr. Epstein.
The receptionist said the hotel was booked up on Friday night. Were you worried that you wouldn't be able to get a room?
A little, but she said that something might open up.
Were you able to get a room?
Yes, I was. There were some cancellations at the hotel, and so I was able to stay until Saturday morning.
Thanks for talking with us again, Charles.
It was my pleasure.
Let's take a short break. Welcome back to Culture Tips. We're here again with our business language expert, Gary Engleton.
Hello, everyone.
Well, Gary, today we have an email about a very important and complicated subject.
Really?
Yes, here it is. When I stay in hotels in the United States, who should I tip and how much money should I give them?
Those are great questions. Tipping is very complicated. But let me give you some guidelines.
That would be very helpful.
We generally tip people in lower-paying jobs, like waiters. These people are paid by the hour, and they depend on tips for extra money. The people who work at the front desk are salaried workers and are paid more, so we don't tip them. We also don't tip managers.
Oh, and how much money should you give people when you tip them?
First, let's talk about the easy situations. In the hotel restaurant, you should give the waiter or waitress an extra 15 to 20% of your bill. And you should tip taxi drivers about 15% of the fare. If the taxi driver carries your bags, you should give a little more. For most other services, tip $2. For example, you should tip anyone who carries your bags to your room. That person is called the porter or bellman. If a porter carries a lot of luggage for you, tip more than $2.
And what about the maid?
$1 or $2 per day is good. You can leave the tip in your room when you check out.
Thank you, Gary. Your information has been really helpful. First, let's listen to a conversation between Mr. Myers and the bellman.
Oh, excuse me. I wonder if you could help me with my bags.
Sure, I'll be glad to help. Which floor is your room on?
Here's another short conversation between Mr. Myers and the desk clerk.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Could I possibly use your fax machine? I'd like to send a fax to my office.
Yes, of course. The fax machine is right over there, behind the desk.
Now let's listen to the third conversation, again between Mr. Myers and the desk clerk.
Front desk, may I help you?
Hello, this is Mr. Myers in room 212.
What can I do for you, Mr. Myers?
I lost a button, and I need to sew it back on. Do you happen to have a needle and some thread?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we do.
If you could send them up to my room, I'd appreciate it.
No problem. I'll have them sent up right away.
Thank you.
Gary提示.
Now it's time for Gary's Tips with Gary Engleton.
Hello, everyone. Last week on Gary's Tips, we talked about requests. We're going to talk some more about requests today. We've already said that a polite way to make a request is to use can or could. For example, you might say, "Could you send a hamburger and an iced tea to room 219, please?" Today, we're going to talk about some even more polite ways to make a request. One way is to begin your request with, "I wonder if." Let's listen again to the first business dialogue. Listen for Mr. Myers saying, "I wonder if."
Oh, excuse me. I wonder if you could help me with my bags.
Sure, I'll be glad to help. Which floor is your room on?
Another polite way to begin a request is to say, could I possibly, or could you possibly? Let's listen to Mr. Myers again, asking to use the fax machine. He starts his request with, could I possibly?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Could I possibly use your fax machine? I'd like to send a fax to my office.
Yes, of course. The fax machine is right over there, behind the desk.
In today's business dialogues, we heard a third way to make a polite request. You can use the expression, I would appreciate it if. You can say, I would appreciate it, either at the beginning or at the end of your request. Let's hear Mr. Myers again as he asks for a needle and thread.
Do you happen to have a needle and some thread?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we do.
If you could send them up to my room, I'd appreciate it.
No problem. I'll have them sent up right away.
Thank you.
In today's dialogue, we also heard Mr. Blake use the expression, I'd appreciate it. Let's listen again.
Oh, by the way, there's a chance I'll be staying one more day, so I might be leaving on Saturday. Is that okay?
Let me check. Well, sir, I'm afraid we're all booked up for Friday night, but something may open up. Can I let you know?
Okay. If you could let me know as soon as possible, I would appreciate it.
Today you heard three different ways to make polite requests. In a business situation, it's good to be extra polite when you are asking for a favor. You will want to use these polite ways to make your requests. I hope today's tips were helpful.
Our guest today is Ms. Bailey. Ms. Bailey is a manager at Universal Bank. Welcome to the program, Ms. Bailey.
Thank you very much.
Today, we're going to talk about money and business travel. We'll be talking about changing money and cashing checks. Ms. Bailey, does your bank handle foreign currency?
Oh, yes. People can exchange dollars for all the major foreign currencies at our bank. We also get a lot of foreign business travelers who want to change their money for dollars.
Can they get good exchange rates at your bank?
Well, yes. The rates are quite good, but there is a fee for exchanging currency.
Ms. Bailey, I have a recording of a conversation between a bank teller and a British customer. The customer changes some money and then tries to cash a personal check. The bank teller refuses to cash his check. Shall we listen to the conversation?
Sure, let's listen.
May I help you?
Yes, can I change British pounds for American dollars here?
Yes, certainly, sir. How much would you like to change?
£100, please.
Just one moment. That comes to $168.45. Here you are, sir.
Thank you very much.
Is there anything else I can help you with?
Yes, please. Could I cash this personal check from my London bank?
I'm afraid that isn't possible. Our policy is that we do not cash out-of-town checks.
It's very important that I cash this check.
Yes, I understand, but it's against bank policy.
Could I see the manager, please?
I'm sorry, but the manager, Mr. Grover, is out right now. The assistant manager, Ms. Grace, is in. Would that be all right?
Yes, that's fine. Thank you.
Certainly. One moment, please.
下面我们继续对银行经理 Bailey 女士进行访谈。
Welcome back to Functioning in Business. We're talking with Ms. Bailey, a manager at Universal Bank. As you heard, Ms. Bailey, the bank didn't cash the check for the man.
That's right. It's unusual for a bank to cash an out-of-town check, especially if the check is from a foreign bank.
Do you cash personal checks at your bank?
Yes, we do, but only if the check is from a local bank. We don't cash out-of-town checks.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Ms. Bailey.
It was my pleasure.
Hello again. We're here with Gary Engleton, our business language expert. Welcome back to Culture Tips, Gary.
Thanks. It's wonderful to be back. So, what's our first email question?
Our first question is, do I need a credit card to travel in the United States?
Excellent question. I would say it's very important to have a credit card. First, having a credit card makes travel in the United States much more convenient.
In what way?
Well, for example, it's impossible to rent a car without a credit card. And credit cards are accepted almost everywhere. Finally, if you carry credit cards, you don't have to carry a lot of cash.
Those are all good points.
Just make sure you get a major credit card that is accepted worldwide.
Thanks, Gary. Here's another email question about paying for things. Should I use checks in the United States?
Well, there are two important types of checks, traveler's checks and personal checks. Traveler's checks are very convenient since they are accepted in most places. They are especially helpful if you want to buy something from a small shop that does not accept credit cards.
Oh, I see.
Personal checks, however, are much more difficult to use. Generally, merchants only accept personal checks from local banks. They don't accept out-of-town checks. So when you're traveling, it's better to use credit cards and traveler's checks than personal checks.
Gary 提示。
Now it's time for Gary's Tips with Gary Angleton.
Hello there. Our function of the day is refusals. To refuse means to say that you can't or won't do something that a person asks you to do. In the business dialogue, you heard several examples of refusals. Let's replay parts of the conversation between the customer and the bank clerk. In the first example, the bank teller refuses to cash a personal check by saying, I'm afraid that isn't possible. Let's listen.
Could I cash this personal check from my London bank?
I'm afraid that isn't possible. Our policy is that we do not cash out-of-town checks.
Using the phrase, I'm afraid, is a very common way to begin a refusal. Some other examples are, I'm afraid I can't help you, or I'm afraid he's not here right now. Another way to begin a refusal is to say, I'm sorry, but... Saying that you're sorry that you can't be more helpful is a very polite way to make a refusal. Here's an example from our bank dialogue.
Could I see the manager, please?
I'm sorry, but the manager, Mr. Grover, is out right now.
Usually, after you say you're sorry, you give a reason for your refusal. For example, if someone asks you to go to lunch and you're busy, you can say, I'm sorry, but I have another engagement. If someone wants to speak to your colleague, but he's not there, you can say, I'm sorry, but he's not here right now. Let's listen to one more polite way to make a refusal. In our example from the bank teller says, Yes, I understand, but... Let's listen.
It's very important that I cash this check.
Yes, I understand, but it's against bank policy.
Usually, you say, Yes, I understand, when the other person is giving you reasons for a request and you want to show that you heard what the person said. Let's hear the example one more time.
It's very important that I cash this check.
Yes, I understand, but it's against bank policy.
There are some less polite ways to make a refusal. Let's hear some examples of things you shouldn't say.
Could I cash this personal check from my London bank?
No, that's impossible.
It's very important that I cash this check.
I told you we can't do that.
In this conversation, the bank teller is very rude to the customer. Remember, make your refusals as polite as possible by saying, I'm afraid and I'm sorry. Well, that's all the time we have for today.
Well, our time is up. Tune in again next time for Functioning in Business. See you then.
今天的商务通英语就复习到这里，谢谢各位收听，我们下次再见。
For further study, a Functioning in Business study kit is available from your local bookstore.
为了帮助学习，商务通英语备有课本和录音带，整套辅导学习材料，听众可以去本地的书店购买。
美国之音现在报告新闻。美国高层军事官员说，伊拉克政府要求美国空袭逊尼派激进分子。这些激进分子占领了伊拉克北部一些关键城市，并威胁要进攻巴格达。美军参谋长联席会议主席陆军上将马丁·邓普西星期三对国会参议院一个小组委员会说，伊拉克政府辜负了本国人民，这令他非常失望。美国国防部长哈格尔说，伊拉克什叶派领导人从未履行有关逊尼派以及库尔德人共同组建团结政府的承诺。正在哥伦比亚访问的美国副总统拜登与伊拉克总理马利基以及逊尼派和库尔德领导人通了电话，他强调指出伊拉克建立团结政府的必要性，只有团结政府才能应对激进分子对全体伊拉克人的威胁。奥巴马总统还没有决定对伊拉克危机的最佳反应方式。星期三，奥巴马在白宫向国会两院领导人通报了情况。美国副总统拜登说，如果俄罗斯不利用其影响力来帮助制止东乌克兰的分离分子的暴力活动，美国及其盟国将让俄罗斯付出更大的代价。白宫说，拜登星期三与乌克兰总统波罗申科进行了电话交谈，双方保证在欧盟领导人下周举行会议之前保持联系。俄罗斯三月并吞乌克兰的克里米亚半岛以后，美国和欧盟对一些俄罗斯个人及其公司实施了制裁。几个月来，亲俄罗斯的分离分子在东乌克兰进行叛乱活动。联合国星期三说，叛乱活动包括杀戮、拷打和绑架，在当地制造恐怖气氛。联合国人权事务官员马加赞尼说，东乌克兰的局势使那些陷入冲突的人们面临困境。联合国人权事务高级专员皮莱敦促分离主义武装分子在顿涅茨克和卢甘斯克停止造成苦难和破坏的行动。他说，现在是放下武器进行对话的时候了。中国一家法院分别判处三名活动人士6年半和3年徒刑。这三名活动人士参与了一个敦促政府官员公示财产的活动。一年来，北京当局对新公民运动进行镇压。江西省这家法院对该组织成员所做的判决迄今是最重的。刘平和魏忠平被判处6年半监禁，罪名是寻衅滋事、扰乱公共场所秩序和利用邪教破坏法律实施。李思华被判处3年监禁，罪名是扰乱公共场所秩序。有关信息来自刘平的辩护律师司伟江，他说法庭的判决是不公正的。在香港的国际特赦组织研究人员倪维平对美国之音说，对这三名活动人士的判决非常荒谬。中国当局逮捕了10多名新公民运动成员。新公民运动是一个组织松散的团体，关注腐败和人权问题。巴勒斯坦民族权利机构主席阿巴斯说，巴勒斯坦军队正在协助寻找3名失踪的以色列女孩，据称他们被哈马斯激进分子绑架。阿巴斯星期三在沙特阿拉伯参加穆斯林领导人会议之前表示，这3名女孩属于巴勒斯坦当局要保护人的生命。阿巴斯说，绑架这3名女孩的人是要毁灭巴勒斯坦人。但巴勒斯坦同时指责以色列总理内塔尼亚胡利用绑架事件打击巴勒斯坦人和制造混乱。他说，巴勒斯坦不能承受与以色列的对抗。阿巴斯表示，用来对抗以色列的正是在国际讲台上提出的论据，而不是武器。西班牙王储菲利普星期四将继承他父亲卡洛斯的王位，成为新国王，西班牙就此进入一个新的时期。星期四的王位交接仪式是简单而低调的，西班牙官员说，王室了解目前西班牙正陷于经济衰退、失业率高，在这种情况下举行盛大仪式不合时宜。现年76岁的国王将近40年的王位星期三正式逊位。
以下为您重播美国之音 VOA 卫视时事大家谈节目，因为是节目录音，请您不要拨打电话。
各位朋友大家好，欢迎您收看美国之音 VOA 卫视在6月18号星期三为您现场直播的时事大家谈节目，我是赵婉成。
各位观众大家好，我是黄耀毅。中国维权律师朴志强以及唐金玲等人最近连番遭到中国政府刑拘。朴志强是因为参加5月3号的私人六四研讨会，唐金玲认为自己是因为推动六四静思节、公民非暴力不合作运动等，所以遭到刑拘。中国维权律师受到打压的情况越来越严重，中国法治社会的前景是否越来越暗淡呢？而中国政府为什么要打压律师？中国司法如果无法独立，谁来保障老百姓的权益？
今天呢，我们很高兴能够邀请到两位嘉宾来为我们分析。一位是在演播室的美国哈德逊研究所客座研究员韩连朝先生，韩先生你好，欢迎您。
好。
另外一位呢，为您介绍的是中国法律学者，同时也是知名的维权律师滕彪。滕彪先生是在香港通过 Skype 来参加今天的节目。滕彪先生您好。
你好，
欢迎您。
是的，那么在正式进入讨论之前呢，我们很荣幸的请到朴志强的代理律师张思智律师为我们来分析最新的案情发展。张律师您好。
你好。
张律师，可不可以请您先介绍一下现在案情最新的发展的情况？我们知道说，在这个6月9号的时候，公安局他也曾经驳回了这个变更强制措施，他说认为对朴志强采取候审可能发生社会危险性，所以说呢不给他这个变更强制措施。您认为说这样的理由合不合法，或者合不合理？
这个理由是抽象的，并不具体，因为应当说明他的社会危险性具体表现在什么地方，这样才可以。比如说我说你是个坏人，但是并不说你为什么坏，你怎么坏，那不行。所以因此我们认为控方的理由很抽象，不太合乎我们现在的法律规定，为此我们还要继续提出申请。
那我们知道说您在前几天也曾经见过朴志强，您说是一个意外的一个情况之下，您能跟我们说一下他现在的情况吗？他在狱中可好？那么其他的家人朋友是不是能够探望他呢？
其他的人不能够去探望他，他现在在狱中精神状态还好，身体状况不太理想。
是。那另外想请教，就是说我们知道说您最著名的就是当年在四人帮审判当中的表现啊，那现在其实您也已经87岁了，是什么让您有这个动力继续愿意出来为中国法律奋斗，而且愿意担任朴志强的代理律师呢？
朴志强是我的好朋友，我是接受他的委托而出来办他这个案件的。
那我们看到现在中国的律师的体制其实建立有很多年轻的律师，但是还是您必须亲自出征啊，您心中有何感触？
我们的年轻律师当然有资格来出庭为朴志强进行辩护，现在的问题是按照我们的规定，当事人只可以委托两个律师，而朴志强基于对我的了解和信任现在委托了我，所以只有我出来了。
是。那我们看到朴志强这个案子之后呢，最近也很多其他的维权律师被抓捕，那么对于其他的在中国境内的维权律师会不会造成寒蝉效应？
这个我不能做出判断，因为我对于那些律师被抓捕的理由我并不清楚。
是的。那您对于中国未来的司法前途，整体的司法前途，在现在有这么多维权律师受到打压的情况之下，您有什么样的看法呢？
我并不乐观，我的理由是因为我们在维权方面在不断的退步。
好的，那谢谢张思智律师接受我们的美国之音的采访。那么我们也期待朴志强的案子能够早日的获得圆满的解决。接下来我们要请韩连朝还有这个滕彪一起来讨论朴志强还有唐金玲的案子，还有中国的法治社会。完成。
好的，首先我问一下韩连朝先生，韩先生，我们刚刚听到张思智律师的回答，他非常精简啊，但是呢也是非常的扼要。
对。
那么我们也看到了这一次朴志强因为5月3号参加一个私人的集会哈，就被遭到这样的一个下场，而且罪名说是滋事哈，这个群事滋事什么窃取公民信息这样的这个情况之下，同时呢他过去以他的经历来讲，他代理过很多非常敏感的案子，
对
不对？每一次都是有惊无险啊，被问话啦，或者甚至短暂的刑拘，大家都觉得捏把汗，但是都还是可以全身而退啊。这一次为什么会变成这样子呢？被正式的逮捕
呀？我觉得这个朴志强是一个中国维权律师的领军人物，那么过去那么多年他已经做了很多的维权方面的工作， 这次呢抓捕他呢是以六四起因来抓捕他的，但是实际上呢，我觉得呢，可能是中国共产党、中共打压这个在公共领域这些有影响力的这个人物所做出的一个整体的战略的这个一部分。那么他就是要打击所谓的这些大 V， 因为他感觉到他主观啊意识到主观认为他的这个意识形态已经失去控制，可能会危及到他这个一党专制，所以呢他要想法的呢扭转这个所谓的这个意识形态失控的这个局面，他所谓认为的这个局面。所以在去年五月份以来就一直采取了一系列打压这个所谓大 V 的这种行动。那么这个行动呢我觉得是一个次序的，那对朴志强的抓捕呢也是他的一部分。朴志强过去呢我们知道他在中国去年就被评为中国新闻周刊评为这个所谓2013年年度的法治人物，那在中国这个法律界是非常有影响的，一直的也是为中国的这个弱势群体在呐喊，在这个支援支持，同时呢挑战了这个所谓公权的这个滥权枉法的这些一个种种这些做法，在中国法治建设上起了一个很关键的作用。这样劳教体制的这个劳教体制的废除，我觉得它是功不可没的。就基于这种原因呢，我讲它一定是中共打压的一个重点的对象。
是，那我想请教一下，在这个香港的滕彪律师，也就是说，我们看到这一次这个起诉他的罪名是寻衅滋事，还有非法获取公民个人信息，您认为这些罪名合理吗？而且最近许多的维权人士被抓捕也都是用这两个罪名哦。这两个罪名是不是这个解释的范围太大了一点，滕彪先生？
对，显然这两个罪名是不成立的。寻衅滋事和这个非法获取个人信息，这个朴志强他作为一个资深的律师，他不可能犯这种违法犯罪的错误。那寻衅滋事罪实际上是一个臭名昭著的一个口袋罪了，从1997年之前的这个流氓罪，一个更大的口袋罪，这个脱胎而来。现在用这个罪名来对付维权律师、维权人士非常多，还有其他常用的，像这个聚众扰乱公共场所秩序罪和非法集会罪等等，这些非政治性的罪名来对付维权人士、异议人士，现在是越来越多了。那这些显然都是不能成立的。
是，那滕彪，我再继续追问您一个问题，就是说这个唐金玲也是用同样的罪名被刑拘超过30天哦。那您知道说他目前他的状况怎么样？他背后被真正逮捕的原因是什么？
和朴志强一样，唐金玲也是维权律师当中非常活跃、非常重要的一位。到目前，他在看守所的情况我们了解也很有限，他的身体状况也很不好。那我想无论对朴志强还是对唐金玲，我觉得不是一件事情，而是算总账的时候，就是现在感觉当局他和以前的这个做法不太一样了，他现在就是要算总账。朴志强从90年代中期以后做律师，就是有代理了很多人权案件、敏感案件，而且每年都要公开纪念六四，还有包括废除劳教等等，公开举报周永康等等，他要把这些都算在一起。那唐金玲做的事情也非常非常多，包括长期的推动公民不合作运动，这个公民赎回选票运动。在全国范围内也非常有影响。那当局就是非常害怕这些在民间有影响力的维权律师，所以对他们两个的这个逮捕，以及对其他维权律师和维权人士的逮捕，是整个的对中国公民社会进行镇压的一部分。
是，谢谢滕彪律师。那林朝兄，你有补充？
对，我就想对刚才滕彪的那个前面提到他的两项罪名的那个起诉啊，我觉得这个罪名实际上都是莫须有的，完全是莫须有的。那么，即使我们不要谈中共这些法律是不是恶法，那么就是按照他们自己法律来解释，我觉得也是不成立的。因为 从这个刑事滋事罪和这个
非法获取工人
公民
个人
信息，他这个刑事滋事罪呢很有意思的，就是说他有一个主观客观的这个两个要件，主观要件就是说他要寻求刺激，这个发泄这个情绪，然后呢逞强耍蛮，
对，
所谓的无事生非，
嗯，
这些人朴志强根本没有这个主观的意愿要去无事生非，对不对？
对。
那从客观的要件上来讲，刑法293条规定得很清楚，那你必须是这个辱骂殴打，
嗯，
这个驱赶，这个或者是这个抢夺人家的财产，或者在公共场所来起哄闹事，这个讲得非常清楚，就是客观要件上和主观要件上都不成立。那么这个在所谓的唯一一个能够挂得上一点钩的，就是说他们把这六四研讨会的这个照片放在网络上面了。这个网络就说本身可能也不是他放上去的照片，但是是不是起的破坏起哄闹事的这个作用，是不是破坏了社会秩序，按照两高后来的解释，就是对这个徇私滋事的这个罪名的扩大性解释，一个是你要是故意的造谣，是吧，然后呢你要是这个故意的这个威慑，在网络上面威胁或者是这个诽谤其他人，这都不存在这样的一些事实，所以就是按照他们自己法律来解释，这些罪名也是莫须有的。那么这个个人的非法收集个人信息也是一样的，他的工商材料、工商这个注册信息，任何人都是
公
布于众的，都可以去寻就搜寻，作为一个律师，这是他的工作的职责的一部分，所以你看每一个项目都是这个莫须有的这个罪名，就是欲加之罪，何患无辞。
而且不只是这个罪名本身呢、啊
嗯，
他在执法方面可能也不一定是公平的，因为你刚刚说到寻衅滋事罪，例如说他上街打闹的话，我们想到每一次这个因为这个钓鱼岛事件，多少人上街打砸这个所谓的日本的产品，或者是游行，或者是甚至有一些暴动的情况出现，这些人都没事。
对，这个是典型的所谓的这个选择性执法，这是中共这个目前的这个执政的一个特点，就是选择性执法，把政治问题呢把它技术化、法律化，然后呢选择性的执法，这个是非常非常的这个。
其实这个也就接下来我们要探讨就是法治社会啊，因为法治社会你是不能够容许这样子以一个随意解释法律、随意破坏法律的方式来进行的，你这样其实是在破坏法治社会的。那在中国现在要建立法治社会的情况之下，中国当局这样的做法是不是会让法治社会没有办法建立？
我觉得中共从来都是把这个法治当作自己的一个这个执政的这个统治维持一党专制的工具，它不是真正的要走这个法治这条路。如果说是有这个意愿呢，那是在文化革命以后80年代初期的时候，那么中共党内呢的确有一批人，包括像彭真啊、这胡耀邦啊，这些想把中国呢逐渐纳入法治的轨道，用宪法来保证每个人的这公民的权利，因为这个文化大革命受害的也是他共产党内很提出来的很多很多人，包括国家主席。那么现在这个一方面，我觉得中共，我们最近知道中共这个六省市这司法改革的这个方案已经提出来了，他一方面呢就是说想走这个所谓的独立司法这条路，当然不完全是独立司法，就是说做一些改革。这个改革的前提呢，实际上要他也是想在纯法律问题上面可能尽量的保证这个司法的公正，采取一系列做法，比如说把法官和公务员制度分开出来，把这个省以下的法院把它裁钱传权把它分开起来，由一个纵向的直接管理，而不是由地方的这个横向的管理，那么这样呢可能会减少一些滥权的这个现象。但是另外一方面他又强调党必须管理这些法治干部，如果是党管法律干部，那法治司法不可能独立。像这种情况呢，基本上还是一个所谓的改善党领导来加强党领导，保证共产党的永久执政，就是这样一个
基本上还是党纪高于国法的一个情况，
是基本上还是人治不是法治，人法治是一个虚拟。
这个其实不是在鼓励贪腐吗？因为我没办法信任法律，人民或是说我今天不管是经商的人或是其他的外企，他没有办法信任这个法律能够确切的被执行，能够公平的被执行，那于是我就一定要透过党，那我可能就要透过贿赂的方式，我要透过私人关系的方式才能够进行或不只是进行对我有利的事情，甚至是保护我自己。那这不是变相的在鼓励这样腐败或者是这种走后门的情况吗？
对，我觉得中共现在是一个比较矛盾的状态，他知道这个腐败现在是一个制度性腐败，全社会的腐败， 那么为了防止这个，他也需要加强司法方面的这个力度，但是呢他又不愿意放弃这个一党专制的这个党对司法的这些领导，怕这个司法变成一个独立的这个党外的这样的一个机构，来对他的这个党的统治构成一个威胁，所以它是一个很矛盾的一个状况。但是呢法治上你这个反腐不走法治这条路是不可能有结果的，不可能从根本上解决这个问题。
其实我也想再问一下，就是连朝兄您可以补充一下，因为我们知道滕彪律师自己本身也就是因为从事维权活动而丧失了律师的资格啊，他没有发律师证给他，那所以说这会不会对这个中国现在的维权律师造成一个寒蝉效应？
我们是不是先请滕彪律师来回答他的看法？然后
滕彪律师刚断线了。
哦，断线哦，好的，那韩先生。
对，我觉得现在中共是把中国这个维权律师当作社会的毒瘤来对待的。他认为他们呢，这个造成了这个社会制度的混乱，就是威胁了中共的这个一党执政。所以呢这次打击的这个重点的这对象啊都是以维权为律师为主，因为律师这些维权律师是在中国维权的第一线，在这个受害者和公权力之间的一个桥梁，一个疏通的一个管道。那么这个管道呢他们认为好像对他的这个一党专制要构成了一个严重的威胁，所以他对 他们进行打压，这样肯定我觉得这个会对形成一个那个晋升的效应。那么很多的这个维权律师已经纷纷出走，从这个今年以来可能更早一点，从这个茉莉花革命开始就已经往外出走了，最近一段时间呢又更多的出走。那很多在国内的这些所谓的死磕派律师也开始在慢慢的这个
担心
提心到吊胆，这个人人自危，就是说尽量的不跨越共产党设置的这个框架，这个我觉得这个是非常对中国法治的建设是非常非常有害的。
是，我想请问，因为你在美国是职业律师啊，我们可以比较一下，其实在美国律师虽然有很多人不喜欢律师这个职业，但是又认为说律师其实是非常重要的，尤其在你面对公权力，很多我们看到美国的很多的这个 case 其实是公民对抗政府的。
是，
那所以在美国情况之下，是说美国的法治社会的情况之下，律师扮演一个非常重要的角色。
对，律师是一个非常非常重要的角色。美国呢，从建国以来，就说参加建国的很多人都是律师，那么差不多30%-30几个人吧，就是这个签署这个的独立宣言的，参加宪法起草工作的很多都是律师，因为这个律师通过法律来保障一个社会的公正，是一个比较有效的渠道，也是这个执政的合法的一个主要来源。一个单一的法律制度，一个在宪法之下的一个单一的法律制度，那么有一定的这个预见性，就人们知道该做什么不该做什么，而且呢又有在法律面前人人平等，不管是什么人，你只要触犯法律，那么法律照样同样的追究，不是这种选择性执法，就法律的一致性还有法律的稳定性。就美国的这个宪法200多年一直没有变化，那中国的这个宪法已经变了4-5次了，是吧？这样的这个法律的不稳定性都会造成这个你这个执政合法性啊失去这个合法性。
好的呀，讲到这个跟美国法律律师的这个情况的对照哈，回到了讲中国的这个律师，特别是维权律师啊，最近纷纷遭到打压，而且呢中国政府这个对维权律师的出手，我想下面请滕彪先生，滕先生您看一看啊，以您过去做律师的经验，看到现在中国这个维权律师遭遇的境况啊，您觉得这个中国这样子干嘛一定要对现在律师们出手哈，这个杀鸡儆猴的作用会导致什么样的一个结果呢？特别是对律师们他们的思虑来讲，
现在已经不是杀鸡儆猴了，现在是鸡跟猴都一起杀了。原来我们做人权律师呢，就是会一直遭遇到各种麻烦，像以我个人为例，就是被停课、被吊销律师证，后来被绑架、被关押，然后受到酷刑，从2003年到现在呢，也有一批律师被判刑，像高志胜啊，朱宇彪啊等等很多， 那现在呢？现在在监狱里边，就除了高志胜、许志勇、丁家喜，还有朴志强、曲振宏、常波阳、唐金玲、吉来松等等，我觉得这是当局对整个民间社会打压的一个重要的一步骤，因为在过去十年来，维权律师在推动整个中国维权运动和公民社会的成长壮大当中发挥了非常重要的作用。那当局从他们的逻辑，从他们一贯的思维方法，他们认为如果不对现在的这些维权律师和公民社会进行一个更大规模的打压的话，那这个民间社会成长壮大的这个趋势就无法遏制啊，进而这个威胁到他们的统治，所以这个可能是深层次的原因。
那藤苗律师，我想继续请教您哦。我们最近看到，除了说抓捕这些维权律师之外，还出台了一个新的所谓律师协会会员违规行为处分规则的草案哦。里头说，律师如果透过互联网等媒介发表影响司法机关依法办理案件的言论，最重会被取消会员资格。那么这两天您因为人在香港，您也知道这个香港发表这个所谓一国两制白皮书，在白皮书里面也是直接把香港的司法人员当作治港人员的这个政府人一部分呢，而不是一个独立的司法独立的一个人员。所以说在这个所谓的北京当局的脑海或者他们的思维里面，是不是司法本身是不独立的，那么法院就是共产党开的呢？那么在这样的情况之下，中国的老百姓要如何来保障自己的权益？
在中国虽然宪法上说法院独立行使审判权，但实际上法院从来都不是独立的，它通过政法委等等来控制整个的这个司法体系。那作为我们人权律师来说，我们最重要的办法之一就是把公检法或者政府的一些违反程序违反法律的东西给通过网络通过媒体曝光。那这个律师协会他就是针对这一点出台了这些新的办法。但律协听起来是一个民间组织，实际上他完全是站在政府一边，受到政府的操控，用来这个控制和打压维权律师的一个工具。那香港的这个白皮书也是在香港最近讨论也非常多啊，港人感觉到非常的愤怒，也非常的担忧。如果香港的司法也受到中共的渗透，失去它独立地位的话，那香港这个大陆化的这个速度就大大的加快了，这是令人非常担忧的。因为我们知道，律师在整个的这个社会当中，无论是专制社会还是民主社会，都扮演非常重要的角色。在中国这样一个特殊的一个体制下，律师他一方面争取人权法治民主，另一方面他也是化解很多的危机，帮助民众来维权。如果这个律师被捆住手脚，那很多这些弱势群体，很多这个受害者就更加没有渠道来解决问题，那这个社会就会更加不公正，这个矛盾就会更加尖锐，所以整个的社会就会面临更大的危机。而这一点无论对民间社会还是对统治者自身都是非常危险的。
那么因为时间的关系呢，关于朴志强、唐金玲等维权律师被捕以及中国法治社会前途的讨论，我们先告一段落。
感谢大家收看今天 VOA 卫视时事大家谈，我是赵婉成。
在明天节目当中呢，将继续关心中国法治岌岌可危的话题。我是黄杨毅，那感谢您的收看，希望明天继续准时收看美国之音 VOA 卫视时事大谈节目。
晚安。
晚安。
谢谢。